Welcome to the PRI Review, brought to you by the Population Research Institute. I'm your host, Christopher Mannion. Paul VI, pray for us. Pope Paul VI is a saint, Holy Mother Church declared, to the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square on Sunday, October 14, 2018. Indeed, he is a saint, and St. Paul VI is beloved above all for his two historic contributions to the Church. First, upon the death of St. John XXIII in 1963, he inherited the Second Vatican Council and presided over it until it adjourned on the Feast of the Immaculate Conception on December 8, 1965. And second, he promulgated Humanae Vitae, the encyclical that announced to the world that while the spirit of the times might change, the truth does not. Today, St. Paul VI is remembered above all for Humanae Vitae, and that is appropriate. The Second Vatican Council had many fathers, after all, but Humanae Vitae has only one. On July 25, 1968, St. Paul VI stood alone when he confronted the decadent age that had plunged headlong into the sexual revolution. Deserted by many among the faithful, both cleric and lay, he held up a mirror to the secular world and warned of the dangerous consequences that would follow on its flight from truth and beauty. Alas, the world responded with resentment and spite and went on its own way. Francis Cardinal Stafford describes that year as Gethsemane, and like Jesus in the garden, St. Paul VI wept when he saw the depths to which the world would fall when it defied the laws of nature and of nature's God. St. Paul VI offered to the world an alternative, the Church's promise of truth and beauty. And how could it not be true and beautiful? The gentle, clear, but firm unfolding of the mystery of sacramental marriage and its role in God's plan for the family, the world, and salvation is central to the most beautiful story ever told. The good, the true, and the beautiful are simple, limpid, and lovable. The evil, the false, and the ugly debauch reality in a thousand ways. There is only one good, but there are countless ways to deny, defy, and defile it, all designed as preambles to its destruction. The family was designed by God to reflect the mystery, unity, diversity, and perfection of the Trinity. Those who hate the designer will hate the design, including the design written on their own hearts. In the past 50 years, we have learned that the dictators of relativism are anything but relativists. They are devoted and hardened apostles of ugliness, sin, and lies. Even before Humanae Vitae was published, they plotted to destroy both the teaching and the Church that taught it. For many years, Paul's encyclical gathered dust on countless shelves, but today, a growing number of bishops have picked up the fallen standard and are preaching it to a world hungry for the truth. More will follow as they see how vital is its message to every generation. We at the Population Research Institute want to help them in every possible way. That's why PRI has created our new website, humanaeviteproject.org. It serves as a clearinghouse for information on life, love, and the family. There we offer countless resources to families, students, scholars, and clerics throughout the world in four languages. This is a labor of love. While St. Paul VI did not pretend to be a prophet, Humanae Vitae has proven to be prophetic indeed. And while he called upon bishops and priests to teach this beautiful doctrine, Paul called on parents and teachers to do so as well. In this generation, that task has fallen to the laity in a special way, because it is in the home that children first learn about love and the gift of life. In our secular culture, it falls to families to raise good children and teach them prayerfully, working with our bishops and priests, to champion the truths that St. Paul VI bequeathed to the Church and to the world. This is the challenge that Father Paul Marx, OSB, accepted when he founded the Population Research Institute. It is the challenge that inspires us today. It is a privilege and a grace for all of us at PRI to share Humanae Vitae with the world on the occasion of the Church's joyous announcement of the canonization of St. Paul VI. This is PRI Review from pop.org. We'll be right back. Do you want to win pro-life legislative and political battles? For years, PRI has been helping pro-life leaders on the ground around the world to win legislative and political battles in order to protect the lives of the unborn. And now we're asking for your help so we can continue this vital work. Let me tell you more. In a number of countries around the world, there are still pro-life laws on the books. But the Planned Parenthood abortion liberales Malthusians are out there to get rid of those laws. Nearly 5 years ago, the Pontifical Council on the Family asked PRI to be the main organization to help the pro-life movements around the world to be more effective. In response to the Vatican's request, we created our Pro-Life Victory Seminars and our Pro-Life Strategy Guide. The seminars are grueling, demanding 12 to 14-hour intense working sessions. Only the most proven and successful leaders are invited to speak. Only the best and the most committed activists are invited to attend. To date, we have conducted 60 such sessions in 18 countries. We have trained more than 1,700 people who are serious about protecting the unborn in their respective countries. They have won some victories, but I'm not going to tell you about those because I don't want to put a target on the back of those leaders. I'm not going to tell you the names of their countries either because I don't want to make it even harder for them to do their work. But here's a hint. Most, though not all, have Spanish as their native tongue. It's no secret that south of our border, pro-abortionists are zeroing in on the existing pro-life laws in that part of the world. I cannot tell you the battle stories, although there are many, without endangering the victories of the leaders. I must ask you to take my word that some battles in some countries could not have been won without the training and support received from PRI. What kind of training am I talking about? Everywhere in the world, defenders of life need everything. Strategic thinking skills, campaign skills, legislative skills, lobbying skills to protect their pro-life laws and to stop pro-death initiatives. Around the world, we found that the biggest thing lacking is know-how. By that, I mean political sophistication. Here in America, we've been fighting pro-life battles for almost 50 years, and while we haven't won definitively, we have learned a lot about how to fight, as well as how not to fight. One of the most important tools of our pro-life victory training is the manual that the trainees get to take home with them, the Pro-Life Strategy Guide, the guide to winning pro-life battles. Think of it as a field guide to activism. The guide is a compendium of know-how. It is 200 pages of distilled experience and wisdom, with step-by-step instructions
this has been your
about
weekly
how
briefing
to advance
from the
our
Population
issue
Research Institute
landscape.
At pop.org. Thanks for
Here's
listening.
A small sampling of the know-how delivered in these training sessions. How to raise money, how to lobby legislators, how to write powerful pro-life advertising, how to effectively appear on TV and radio, how to enlist volunteers, how to get out the vote, and how to successfully debate pro-abortionists. All this and much, much more is covered in the training program and reinforced in the training guide. The first edition came out in 2012, but we are all out of them now. They have all been put in the hands of able pro-life leaders. So today we have had it revised and updated by two of the best and most successful activists in the Spanish-speaking world. Today, the new PRI, Pro-Life
this
Strategy
This is the PRI
guide,
Review
the
from the Population Research Institute at pop.org. We'll
press.
Be right back.
This is where you come in.
Will you help us get it into the hands of the people who need it? It's in Spanish right now, and that's as it should be, because we distribute it throughout the Spanish-speaking world. The Vatican wants this field manual in every diocese in the world. Will you help me to fulfill that request? PRI has ordered 10,000 copies of the guide to be printed, enough for every student who will attend our training sessions for the next several years, along with all the actively pro-life bishops around the world. Just the printing alone will cost $50,000. The whole International Victory Training Program costs another $50,000, and that is in addition to the field guide. But right now we want to get those guides printed. So I turn to you because I know you understand its value. The cost comes out to about $5 per book, which is not very much considering the impact it can have and the lives it can save. With your tax-deductible gift of $50, PRI can put this guide into the hands of 10 in-country pro-life leaders. With a gift of $100, we can make sure that 10 friendly bishops get a copy to guide their strategic thinking in the protection of life. No gift is too small. If you can only spare $5, please send it today. Unborn babies around the world will be safer because of your sacrifice today. Can we count on you to help PRI to continue to train and empower the pro-life movement around the world? On behalf of all those fighting to preserve pro-life laws around the world, thank you.
Puerto Rico Senate introduces sweeping bill banning abortion after 20 weeks. Pro-lifers to show support for PS 950 at March for Life in San Juan on Friday, September 28th. The Puerto Rico Senate has introduced a bill that would go a long way towards protecting life in the Commonwealth. The bill, PS 950, would introduce a wide array of pro-life laws to Puerto Rico, including a ban on abortion after 20 weeks, a ban on sex-selective and eugenic abortion, and would require informed consent for women seeking abortion and parental consent for abortions performed on minors. Called the Law for Protection of Women and Preservation of Life, PS 950 would contain a number of provisions similar to those adopted by many states in the United States to protect the life and safety of both women and their unborn children. In Puerto Rico, it is legal to abort a baby up to the 9th month. Minors can get abortions without parental notification, says Jenna Penance, Director of Communications for Fieles a la Verdad, a pro-life organization in Puerto Rico, supporting the passage of PS 950. Well, what would PS 950 do? The bill would ban all abortion after 20 weeks, except in the case of a medical emergency, the point at which many scientists believe the unborn child is capable of experiencing pain. The bill would also prohibit sex-selective abortion and would prevent eugenic abortion of unborn children and diagnosed with genetic disabilities. Any doctor who violates these provisions would be punished with 15 years in prison. The bill would also prohibit physicians from performing abortions on minors without the knowledge or consent of their parents. Ever since the Puerto Rico Supreme Court's decision in Pueblo v. Duarte Mendoza in 1980, it has been fully legal in Puerto Rico for minors to have an abortion without parental consent or notification. According to Fieles a la Verdad, Senator Nadia Venegas Brown, the bill's sponsor, explained the need for the bill, and I quote, "A minor needs the consent of her parents before going and being evaluated by a dentist or ophthalmologist. It is worrisome that in Puerto Rico today, a minor 12 years of age can go to an abortion clinic to end a pregnancy without the consent of her parents," end quote. PS 950 addresses this shortcoming in the law by requiring that at least one parent or legal guardian provide written consent at the abortion clinic and provide a copy of their government-issued ID. However, in cases where parents are opposed to their daughter's abortion, she may obtain a consent waiver from a judge. In addition,
to parental consent and gestational limits on abortion, PS 950 would require abortions after the first 12 weeks of pregnancy to be performed in an authorized hospital. This provision would help prevent standalone private facilities like Kermit Gosnell's late-term clinic from performing second and third trimester abortions. PS 950 further makes it very clear that infants who survive an abortion attempt are protected under Puerto Rico law. In addition, any doctor who causes the death of an abortion survivor, including by negligence or refusal to provide emergency care, would be guilty of a felony. The bill would also introduce a number of measures to ensure that women undergoing abortion are permitted to provide their full informed consent. PS 950 would require physicians to provide women with information on the medical risks of having an abortion, including by informing them that the abortion will end the life of a whole separate and unique life. They would also be required to provide women with their name and contact information, as well as contact information for the local hospital in case of an emergency. Under PS 950, physicians would be required to offer women the opportunity to review an ultrasound of their baby. The bill would further establish a de facto 48-hour waiting period to ensure that women seeking abortion are given sufficient time to consider the risks of abortion. They would thus be allowed time to come to a decision regarding the abortion free from coercion. The bill would also require abortion facilities to post signage informing women that they have the right not to be forced by family members or medical staff into having an abortion. While Puerto Rico's penal code prohibits abortion except to save the life or health of the mother, a series of decisions handed down by Puerto Rico's Supreme Court in the early 1980s eviscerated the Commonwealth's pro-life laws and emptied them of any meaningful enforcement. In 1980, in Pueblo v. Duarte Mendoza, the Puerto Rico Supreme Court ruled that the U.S. Supreme Court's decisions in Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton applied not only to the 50 states, but also to Puerto Rico, which is an unincorporated territory of the U.S. The court also reinterpreted the term health in Puerto Rico's abortion law, stipulating that the term health contained in our statute implies physical health as well as mental health. The ruling effectively legalized abortion on demand in Puerto Rico up to the point of viability and even after viability in cases of so-called life and health of the mother. Pro-life laws are sorely needed in Puerto Rico. As the majority in the Duarte Mendoza decision opined, our legislation turns out to be more lax than the criteria adopted in Roe v. Wade. That observation became all but true once the Supreme Court of Puerto Rico gutted the Commonwealth's pro-life laws and legalized abortion on the island. In PR, there are no laws regulating abortion, Penance told the Population Research Institute. Puerto Rico is among the U.S. jurisdictions with the most permissive conditions regarding abortion. Aside from some requirements that abortion be performed by a physician and that abortion facilities and physicians be licensed and registered with the government, there are few restrictions on abortion in Puerto Rico. According to the Pro-Abortion Center for Reproductive Rights, the Puerto Rico Department of Health even waives, upon request, its own requirement that physicians complete an OB-GYN residency program in order to perform abortions. And I quote, in 2008, the Department of Health issued some abortion center rules. However, they allow the Secretary of Health to grant exemptions to all of its dispositions, Penance told PRI. There is no evidence regarding the level of compliance, end quote. Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood v. Casey permitted states a limited right to restrict abortion in the interest of protecting the life of the unborn child and the health of the mother. Despite this fact, the Commonwealth has not availed itself of this right since the Duarte Mendoza decision. Since Roe v. Wade, most states have adopted at least some basic restrictions on abortion, many states adopting safeguards similar to those proposed under PS 950. According to the Guttmacher Institute, a pro-abortion research and policy organization, 26 U.S. states already require parental consent for minors seeking abortion. Another 11 states require parental notification for minors.
26 states also require waiting periods of at least 24 hours for women to safely consider their decision whether to undergo abortion. Currently, 19 states have laws requiring abortion at later gestations to be performed at a hospital. However, if PS 950 is adopted, the bill's requirement that abortion be performed in a hospital after the first trimester would make Puerto Rico's hospital requirement among the strongest such laws in the United States. If PS 950 is adopted, Puerto Rico would also join 17 U.S. states that currently require physicians to offer women seeking an abortion at the very least the opportunity to see an ultrasound of their baby prior to termination. Puerto Rico would also join 8 states in banning the practice of sex selection abortion. If PS 950 is passed, Puerto Rico would join 16 states in banning abortion after 20 weeks of gestation. 2 states, North Carolina and Mississippi, ban abortion even earlier at the equivalent 18 weeks after conception. However, even the 18-week gestational limit is far more permissive than the abortion laws in most countries. Even in countries widely permissive towards abortion, gestational limits for abortion are set earlier than those in the United States, according to the Center for Reproductive Rights. Sweden maintains an 18-week gestational limit for elective abortion. In France, Belgium, and Germany, the elective abortion is limited to 14 weeks gestation. According to the Charlotte Lozier Institute, only 7 countries worldwide permit elective abortion after 20 weeks. Pro-life Puerto Ricans have been coming together in support of PS 950. Pro-life organizations in Puerto Rico have planned a March for Life on Friday, September 28th, to support PS 950, and they will march to the Capitol in San Juan to urge the Legislative Assembly to pass the bill. This is PRI Review from pop.org. We'll be right back. What's the best way to celebrate Humanae Vitae's 50th birthday? For most of us, the answer is close to home, and specifically in our own parishes. Here's why. 6 years ago, when Timothy Cardinal Dolan was president of the U.S. Bishops' Conference, he admitted that our bishops have had laryngitis on Blessed Pope Paul's beautiful encyclical. Laryngitis for 50 years. Unfortunately, that's still true for many bishops who are too tied up with the political agenda of their national bureaucracy in Washington. There, issues like global warming, socialized medicine, and federal contracts for the bishops' welfare agencies have dominated the agenda for years, crowding out pro-life efforts and leaving Humanae Vitae an orphan. That doesn't mean that the lay faithful haven't been asking. We have. In fact, pleas to our shepherds have had some heartwarming results in recent months, with several bishops coming forward with strong public defenses of Humanae Vitae. But the real work has to come from the grassroots, and that means the laity, because our busy bishops can't do it alone. They need our support, our encouragement, and our prayers. After all, the pro-life movement started at the grassroots, and its strength has stayed there. Bishops are often supportive of pro-life groups in their dioceses, but few are focused on them. Most chancery staffs spend much more time on immigration, refugees, fundraising, and other programs that receive federal funding. Pro-life efforts receive no federal funding, so pro-lifers have to fend for ourselves. While our bishops have countless distractions, our parish priests know us and we know them. They offer our most reliable source of support and encouragement when it comes to celebrating Humanae Vitae's birthday party. And a wise pastor has a good suggestion on how to make it work. It boils down to this. Instead of telling your pastor, "Father, you ought to do something about this," tell him, "Father, a group of us would like to have a reading group in the parish to study Humanae Vitae. We've got the texts, the commentaries, and all the materials. All we need is some space in the parish one night a week and an announcement in the bulletin to spread the word. Don't worry, we'll do all the work, but we'd love to have your support, and it would be great if you could join us whenever you can. And by the way,
A further note from long pastoral experience. Don't ask Father on the way out of Mass. Write him a note and ask him for a few minutes of his time at his convenience. There you'll have his full attention, and he can write down what he remembers of your conversation, and that's impossible when 50 or 100 people are shaking his hand after every service. Writing that letter also gives you the opportunity to pad your pitch with some supporting evidence. In this case, not only the support from bishops, including your own, we hope, but especially referring to the world-class conference that the bishop sponsored in Washington at the Catholic University of America last April. It was thanks to the support from Catholic University's stalwart President John Garvey that this conference came off without a hitch, with the admirable support of the conference offered 3 days of top-notch speakers and presentations, and they're all online. Supporters of Humanae Vitae can cite this national conference as their inspiration for activities throughout the country in the diocesan and parish levels. And here's some great news. Our new website devoted to Humanae Vitae is now online. It's a treasure trove of information for your parish group. Here's how to find it. Go to your website browser and type in humanaevitae.org. No spaces, and remember, the dot is a period. There you will find a treasure trove of information for your parish group. Just go to humanaevitae.org to find not only the masterful history of contraception by Dr. Gonzalo Herranz in four languages, and by the way, that's the history of the promotion of contraception against church teaching and natural law for over 100 years, but it also includes the latest news and links in a wide array of resources. We'll be updating the site continually with new reports, materials, and insights from all over the world. In no time, it will be your go-to site for Humanae Vitae news. Remember, just go to humanaevitaeproject.org and enjoy. And please don't forget to support PRI, so that we can keep this project worldwide in four languages going until everyone knows the truth about Humanae Vitae. UN human rights experts demand legalized abortion worldwide. Their attempt to redefine the Universal Declaration of Human Rights to exclude the unborn is covered by our Jonathan Abamonte. States across the world should act now to decriminalize abortion, says a group of UN human rights experts. A statement released last Friday by UN human rights experts to commemorate something called International Safe Abortion Day urged the international community to guarantee access to safe and legal abortion. The group further exhorted governments to take an active role in securing the availability of abortion by ensuring that women are given more support and autonomy to undergo the procedure, end quote. UN human rights experts serve the UN Human Rights Council as special rapporteurs and independent experts on various human rights issues. For the past 3 years, they have used International Safe Abortion Day as a pretext for admonishing the international community to depenalize and legalize abortion. In 2016, they had even called on all countries worldwide to legalize abortion, and I quote, on request, end quote. This was the first time a UN human rights body has explicitly called for the universal legalization of abortion on demand. The statement released by UN human rights experts on Friday made a number of controversial claims. That laws defending the right to life of the unborn are rooted in discriminatory legacies supported by religious and cultural norms, and that such pro-life religious and cultural values embody harmful stereotypes of women's roles in the family and society. In harmony with statements made by other UN human rights bodies, the group of experts asserted that the right of health care, workers, and conscientious objection to abortion cannot be permitted to interfere with the availability of abortion. Conscientious objection cannot be a basis for denying women access to abortion, they insisted. UN experts also took direct aim at pro-life advocates, claiming that the pro-life label is misleading and an inaccurate description of people who oppose the termination of the life of an unborn child. The statement also incorrectly suggests that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, UDHR, should be interpreted to exclude the unborn. Article 1 of the UDHR states that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. The group claims that the text implies that human rights are conferred only on persons who are already born. But on the contrary, the records of the draft proceedings of the UDHR make it clear that this misinterprets the drafter's understanding of the term born when it was included in the declaration. Rather, they choose to use the term born to recall French Enlightenment-era political theory on the rights of man and to indicate the normative and inherent character of human rights. The human rights experts that joined in on Friday's statement served under a mechanism of the Human Rights Council known as special procedures. Experts approved by the Human Rights Council under this mechanism are responsible for advising and reporting to the Council and to the UN General Assembly on specific human rights topics or on countries of particular concern. Special procedures consist of special rapporteurs, independent experts, or working groups that serve as human rights experts at the United Nations. Special procedures also contribute to developing human rights standards and issue recommendations to states on human rights issues. The Human Rights Council made headlines earlier this year when the United States withdrew its membership due to systemic corruption and politicization in the Council. For too long, the Human Rights Council has become a protector of human rights abusers and a cesspool of political bias, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley at the time. In recent years, the Human Rights Council refused to address serious human rights abuses in Venezuela and Iran. Last October, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, a nation with egregious human rights records, was offered membership on the council. The statement issued on Friday by the UN human rights experts is just the latest in a series that Special Procedures has released on International Safe Abortion Day. The statement issued in 2016 was perhaps the most sweeping endorsement of abortion ever to come from a UN human rights body. The 2016 statement was derived in large part from a groundbreaking 2016 report from the Working Group on the Issue of Discrimination Against Women in Law and in Practice. The report called on all states to legalize abortion on request within the first trimester. It is believed that this document was the first instance that an independent human rights expert appointed by a United Nations human rights body has issued an official UN report explicitly recommending that all nations legalize abortion on request. It is not uncommon for human rights bodies at the UN, as well as independent experts, to call upon states to loosen restrictions on abortion, to decriminalize abortion, to ensure access to safe abortion, or to legalize abortion under specifically tailored circumstances, such as rape or health of the mother. However, prior to the Working Group's 2016 report, UN experts had not previously called upon all states to legalize abortion on request. The use of the term on request is significant. It is the terminology the UN system uses when referring to the legal status of abortion in countries where abortion is already available on demand. Statements such as those urging states to ensure access to safe abortion are open to interpretation, but the phrase on request clearly is not. The term on request directly translates to elective abortion on demand. The 2016 report of the Working Group also calls for states to repeal restrictive laws and policies on abortion. These included legalizing abortion after the first trimester in cases of rape, incest, physical and mental health of the mother and fetal disability. The report further urged that all legal penalties on women seeking abortion be removed. This included even common sense regulations on abortion, such as waiting periods. A draft general comment currently under consideration by the UN Human Rights Committee similarly recommends that states legalize abortion under the same circumstances outlined in the Working Group's 2016 report. But even there, the draft does not specifically recommend that states should legalize abortion on request. That distinction makes the Working Group's 2016 report unique in that respect. In fact, in October of last year, the Working Group went so far as to criticize the Human Rights Committee's draft general comment as too restrictive. It urged the committee not to limit abortion to specifically enumerated cases. There are other similarities. In 2014, the committee issued a statement on the elimination of discrimination against women. This statement, commemorating the 20th anniversary review of the International Conference on Population and Development, called on states to legalize abortion in cases of rape, incest, health of the mother, and fetal disability. However, it never specifically recommended that states legalize abortion on demand. A similar 2015 statement issued by UN human rights experts also stopped short of calling for the legalization of abortion on request. The Working Group's 2016 report recommending that states legalize abortion on demand represented a clear departure from the program of action from the 1994 International Conference on Population and Development, known as the ICPD. This international agreement was signed by representatives from 179 nations. The documents stated that in no case should abortion be promoted as a method of family planning. Promoting abortion on demand for all practical purposes is indistinguishable from promoting abortion as a method of family planning. The demand for legalizing abortion on request serves no other purpose than to permit the use of abortion as a family planning method. The Special Procedures Group has a long history of abortion advocacy. Those who hold a mandate from Special Procedures to the Human Rights Council have long since used their platform as human rights experts to promote abortion. A 2016 report from the Special Rapporteur on the Right to Health declared that states are strongly encouraged to decriminalize abortion and urge states to guarantee access to confidential abortion services to all adolescents. A significant report issued under the same mandate in 2011 recommended that states decriminalize abortion. They should consider imposing a moratorium on the application of criminal laws concerning abortion, it continued, effectively requesting that states consider ceasing to enforce their abortion laws. Consider the 2016 report from the Special Rapporteur on Torture and Other Cruel, Inhuman, or Degrading Treatment or Punishment. Following the long practice of many UN treaty monitoring bodies, the report stated that the denial of abortions in certain contexts amounts to torture or ill treatment. Special Procedures have also for many years issued communications to countries with the request that they legalize abortion or remove restrictions on abortion. Unfortunately for pro-lifers, once they are elected to their posts, human rights experts appointed to Special Procedures of the Human Rights Council are largely unaccountable to UN member states. Mandate holders are not considered to be members of the UN staff. Once they are appointed to their position, they serve in their personal capacity for the duration of their term. This has been the PRI Review from the Population Research Institute at pop.org. Thanks for listening.